Good morning. You're listening to the KPCW Local News Hour. As we've mentioned, we've got Dr. Jill Gilday. She's the new superintendent of schools for the Park City School District. She most recently comes from Connecticut, where she led the Greenwich Public School System, and she's been a superintendent over a decade. And with that introduction, I'd like to welcome you, Jill. Thank you for coming in so quickly after this announcement.
Thank you, Carolyn. It's so nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you. So the press release that we received shows that you have experience in curriculum, in the classroom, in administration. Can you tell us a little bit about your background and your expertise, please?
Certainly. I spent 10 years in the classroom working with middle school learners, then moved on to be a high school divisional head of an English department. So I was able to work with English and reading and library media sciences. And it was a large high school, about 3,200 students. And from there, I became an elementary principal and then spent many years in curriculum and leadership, organizational development. And then I've been a superintendent now. It's my 11th year.
Okay, so how did you find your way to Park City from Greenwich, Connecticut? This is a very big lifestyle change, I would guess. And tell us a little bit about how you got here, and then also just what is the Greenwich Public School System like?
Oh, Greenwich Public School System is outstanding, and I know that that is similar and parallel to Park City, so I'm really excited about that. I think being in innovative and progressive systems is just really my interest and my strong suit, and I see that in Park City. I had the wonderful benefit a couple of years ago to come and visit Park City School District because of a personalized learning workshop that we were doing, and this was one of the districts that was highlighted. And so I came in and toured the schools, and I remember thinking, wow, if the superintendent ever left, that would be somewhere I would love to be. And here we are a few years later.
Okay. And Greenwich is a pretty affluent community.
It is.
Similar.
It's beautiful. Absolutely beautiful. 9,000 students, 15 schools, about $1 billion valuation of the school properties.
9,000 students, you
yes.
said? Okay.
Yes.
Okay. So that's about almost twice the size of this school district. We don't have 15 schools. We have about half that. So it kind of is a similar ratio. So are there differences that you've noticed already?
I do think that the innovative and progressive work that you have going on in Park City with learner-centered, kind of future-focused schools is very appealing. So I'm very excited about that.
And when you say learning-centered, is that like a professional learning community, the PLC, that has been so much a focus of our prior superintendent's efforts here?
Sure. It's this idea that you are really focusing your energies and your strategic direction and initiatives really around the learners and around their strengths and their readiness and their needs and their interests. And you're allowing students to really be empowered through the system. So I think that work of the adults who are focusing on the student growth and their gains and their data can then create and facilitate those learning opportunities for kids that keep, you know, just provides limitless opportunities for youth. And I think that's what I'm really excited about here.
Okay, I'm gonna load you up with some things. Our school district is undergoing many changes, not just in our staffing administration, but we also have a very new strategic plan that was put in place late last year, early this year. We're on the cusp of starting another master planning effort after a failed bond in 2015. We have what some have referred to with Treasure Mountain Junior High School as a failing facility and outdated and not a healthy environment. Some have said that, and some even calling it a dangerous place. We've had a lot of turnover in district administration. We are about to have additional turnover, losing our curriculum director to retirement, potentially Tim McConnell, our human resources director, leaving at some point, probably 2019 is what he has been suggesting, and a new high school principal. So we also have programs, multi-tiered learning systems that have been put in place. As we mentioned, the professional learning communities, a new wellness program, lots and lots going on. Have you done this before? Have you been in this situation before? And
Absolutely.
Are you crazy?
Absolutely. I mean, I think everything you mentioned, it's just, it is the schools are a reflection of the communities we serve. And in really healthy communities, I think you find really healthy, vibrant schools. So I think we always want to work to keep the community vibrant and healthy. I think we always want to reflect the values of the community. And I think the new strategic plan helps coalesce those values around this plan. And I think you'll see that my transition plan, I will just mirror it right along with that strategic plan so that those initiatives can keep moving forward. I think the biggest thing coming in new is you don't want to be seen as somebody who's turning everything upside down. You want to keep the progress that's going happening. So I think that part is really key as you're learning the system. But obviously these first, you know, months, even the first year, is really learning and reflecting and assessing things and making recommendations and ensuring that you have that transparent communication with the community so that they all feel a part of all of these things that are going on. But all the things you mentioned are critical, right? Wellness is critical. Focusing on the learners is critical. The multi-tiered system of supports, it's a national effort. We need to have that for learners so that we don't kind of lose them in the system, right? We have to focus everything on providing limitless opportunities for youth.
So what about, though, the facilities part of things? And have you been through a bond resolution? Have you built new facilities as a leader of a school district? And what was that like? What were the pitfalls? What were the successes?
Yeah, so I think part of it's coalescing the community around what it values. And we're going through this in Greenwich as well. We have a 15-year master facility plan. We have about $1 billion worth of real estate in our schools in Greenwich, and we need about $750 million of work, if you can imagine that.
$750 million
of work. So yes, I am familiar. And, you know, we have 1902 buildings out there. So you have everything here is, you know, much newer than that. So we have a lot of issues with that there as well. And, you know, I've dealt with the soil remediation kinds of issues. I've dealt with building projects. I've dealt with renovation, really transforming learning environments. That was something that I did in my last district. We really did a whole scale effort as to ensuring that this classroom, the learning environment, reflects the modern world, not just rows of desks anymore.
Okay. And it just based on your CV, it looks like you have not really been in Greenwich very long. I mean, you, not even a year.
Okay.
It'll end up being an exact year since. So why, I mean, that seems like that could leave Greenwich in quite, if they've got that kind of work to be done, what would make, what would justify leaving that?
Right. Well, you know, family relocation does happen sometimes. And my husband was transferred to New York and then was transferred here. So it is just a wonderful gift and a blessing that I'm able to come and be a part of this community and lead, because I do love being a superintendent. So I would have stayed in Greenwich if something in this area did not turn up. But as I said, I had visited a few years ago, loved it, and thought I at least have to try. And if it wouldn't have worked out, my husband and I would have just been a little bit of coast to coast, you know, for a while. But I'm thrilled that it did. So with Greenwich, you know, I will not leave until we have a strong interim or a replacement in place and transition them, and then I'll be here. So I'll be looking forward to that. So in between, you know, you'll see me every now and again to get my legs under me and get to know this place. But I'll make sure that things are in good shape there, because it's an excellent.
So do we have a start date then, or is this not
here by August? I'm sure I'll be here by August 1st.
Okay, and they're working to find your replacement
Oh,
there.
Yes, we already have great.
So what happens in a year if something like family upheaval occurs again? What happens in Park City?
This is actually the headquarters now. This is the newly named headquarters of this corporation. So we are very, very certain that this could be a long-term stop, and we're thrilled about that, especially because my husband loves the lifestyle out here. He loves the outdoors, loves winter sports and summer and spring sports. And he said, I think you're never going to be able to wrench me from there. I said, then I'll try to do a really, really good job.
Well, there's a lot we have to catch up on. We've got achievement gap issues, later start times, kids getting more sleep, trying to work out the busing schedule. So we'll be talking some more, but we've got to wrap it up for right now.
Absolutely.
Okay. Thank you so much, Jill, for coming
in.
Good morning. It's 8:21. Our next guest is Tom Fisher. He's the Summit County Manager. He is in this morning to give us a preview of the upcoming council meeting. And let's start it. Welcome, Tom.
Thank you
Thanks
very much.
Thanks for showing
How
up.
This morning?
I'm good. So the opening, let's discuss the Central Park condos. Why is council interested in the Central Park condos?
Well, very simply that the Park City Council invited them to tag along for a preview of it, just to see what the Park City Council has been working on in relation to their master planning for affordable housing. So I imagine the council members. We haven't figured out yet which council members are going to go, but we wanted to agenda it just in case.
Okay. And will that happen on Wednesday or?
It will. Okay. We'll start at 10 a.m.
10 a.m. Long, it could be a long day. So also a set of resolutions for the county's water district. Mountain Regional is looking at annexing community water. And this is aligned with the county's, this is in line with the county's goals to take in the smaller water systems that are having some issues, some problems. And this serves about 500 customers, it looks like,
located in the
canyons.
Along with Mountain Regional Water, the council has been going through the process of this annexation for about the past three months. This is the final step in that process. So it has been vetted by both the Mountain Regional Water Administrative Control Board thoroughly, as well as the county council along the way. So they'll take this final step today, and then that annexation will be complete.
So there was a protest period already in place?
That period has ended. That's correct.
Was there very much?
There was not any protest.
Concern? Okay. So that's happening. I'm sorry. When? What's the timeline on that?
So it'll be finished on Wednesday.
Oh, my goodness. Okay. You've got some work to do on Wednesday. So also the council will be talking about new transit taxes. Could you give us a background? These are in addition to the voter-approved transportation and transit taxes from last year, so more taxes for transit.
Well, actually, from 2 years ago.
That's been 2 years.
It was 2016 when the community adopted the two sales taxes, one for general transportation and then one for transit. So in the 2015 or either the 2014 or the 2015 legislative session, the legislature put in place what's called the fourth quarter, which is a tax that is allowed to be imposed by counties for transportation purposes. And at the time, it was it needed voter approval in order to be imposed. And it was a sales tax of 0.25% that would go into a redistribution formula around the state, where 50% of it would be distributed by population numbers and then 50% by point of sale. You contrast that with the two sales taxes that the county imposed in 2016. All of those taxes are point of sale. So those goes 100% to our county, which was one of the attractions of those over this fourth quarter that the legislature put in place in 2014. So fast forward to the 2017 legislative session, or the 2018 legislative session, since it was this year. Time goes very quickly, doesn't it? And not a lot of counties put in place that fourth quarter, and it was one of the legislature's attempts to increase transit funding in the state, mainly for the Wasatch Front, but for transit, essentially. So they've put further incentives in place for counties to impose those taxes. So this fourth quarter, which is 0.25% for transportation, and then they've added a fifth quarter. It's cleverly called a fifth quarter, even though you can't have a fifth quarter. That's 0.22% dedicated solely to transit, and it's 100% point of sale. So it would stay 100% in our county if it was imposed. Both of these, they've given county councils the ability to adopt these without voter approval. So several counties are looking at these. In fact, all counties are looking at these that haven't already imposed them. The big ones that are looking at it are Salt Lake County and Utah County. Davis County has already imposed it the fourth quarter. So one of the things you'll notice in the staff report is for the fourth quarter, the one that's redistributed throughout the state would not come 100% to the county if it was imposed. We're kind of suggesting that we wait and see what Salt Lake County and Utah County do, because unless those counties with their large populations impose those taxes, it doesn't make much sense for a small county to do that.
It wouldn't pencil out for
us.
It
doesn't pencil out. There's not enough revenue in order to make that useful for us to impose.
So is the point two, that would be 100% to the existing county. But you can't do the point two without doing the point 0.25.
You can do the point two without doing the point 0.25, so we're considering that also. However, you can't impose the point two fifth quarter until July of 2019. So we've got some time on that one to discuss it. Certainly discuss it with our citizens, but also the elected officials around the county to provide some more education and figure out what is the best thing for Summit County to do in this situation.
So what would be if we were to take the transit and transportation taxes that were passed in 2016? What are we looking at in terms of if we were to adopt almost this 0.5, mm-hmm. this half a percent tax?
So what it starts to do, so you can kind of look at it in two different ways. If no other counties adopted these taxes, we would start to have one of the largest tax rates, sales tax rates in the state. But under these, and this is one of the points of discussion, because all counties are being encouraged to impose these, it becomes relative. So if we impose them and other counties impose them, all our tax rates go up at about the same rate. So taking kind of a wait and see approach to this might be the best approach, even in the short run. The legislature has put a further incentive in the fourth quarter that seems enticing, but depending on how things happen around the state, might not be. They have said that if you impose the tax by June 30th of this year, so it goes in place on July 1st, the county can, even though it will be redistributed after 2019, the county can keep 100% of that revenue in its first year. So that's one of the things that county councils and county commissions around the state are contemplating as they look at imposing these taxes or not.
Okay. Boy.
Very complicated, I
understand.
Convoluted.
Okay.
You know, probably the hardest thing is that most of our constituents and our voters are used to sales taxes being a vote of the people and whether those are imposed or not. The legislature has put this responsibility solely on the county council in our case.
It's interesting. Have you received feedback at all? On this from the public? Or
We have. I mean, I think it's mixed. Transportation, transit, congestion, one of the strategic goals of the county, one of the strategic goals of Park City. We hear from our cities that transportation funding is always not enough. So you look at what has been put in place, and that is enticing to start to solve some of those problems and get you further along solving those problems that are out there. But it is very soon after imposing some other taxes, and so I think that's all being weighed.
Hmm. Okay. Well, and there still remain neighborhoods that aren't really accessed with direct transit services.
That's absolutely right. And we have plans in place to expand transit services when we have the revenue. So that's one of the enticing things about this. We're a community that's trying to grow transit,
right,
and grow an ethic of not driving in your individual car.
I'm thinking Trailside, which is a substantial community that doesn't have, it takes an hour and 10 minutes or something to get in on a bus. So interesting. Okay. Well, keep us up to speed on that.
Absolutely.
Now, there's also a discussion about a new alert system. It would combine the county sheriff's department, the health department, and Park City. And what is this, and how does it differ from 911?
Well, 911 is a system that largely you access by calling in to access the system and then get services dispatched based on what is happening or what's being reported in that call. Now, there is systems around the country that are reverse 911. Largely, those were based on landlines. So as our system has moved more to mobile phone technology, they have been less useful over time. So these systems are web-based. They're subscription services, kind of, meaning that you have to sign up for it. It doesn't cost you anything to sign up for it. But you can actually go into the system and sign up for alerts either on text or on email or other means of communication based on what you want to know about. It can be based on your neighborhood. It can be based on your zip code. It can be based on your town. But what's also interesting is that if you have kids in school, you can make selections that give you alerts related to schools. You can get alerts related to certain kinds of events. If you're interested in earthquakes, well, if there was earthquake activity, you can make those selections. Probably our most likely events are fire. So having someone signed up to deal with their neighborhood and where they work in relation to wildfire is probably some of our most important things to get people signed up for.
Okay, and so what would something like that cost the county?
I'm not sure what the cost is. I'll have to take a look at that deeper. I know that since we're partnering with Park City, we're kind of sharing those costs across our governments. And we've done that in the past with different systems. The sheriffs and the Park City Police system for both dispatch and for doing their daily work, those systems are shared. So I'm sure there's some economies of scale related to that as well.
There is a texting emergency alert system now in place, is there
not?
Yeah,
there is. But those systems have been kind of disparate between the school districts and our towns and our county. Now they'll all be together so that they can be managed as one system, which will make us much better.
I see. And then those other systems will probably get dropped.
Over time, that's correct. I think they're going to all be merged into this system, actually.
Okay. And Tom, it looks like there is a discussion on appointing some temporary judges for the Justice Court. Is Judge Kerr off for some reason, or are these just-in-case appointments?
Well, this happens on an annual basis. So if Judge Kerr goes on vacation, and every once in a while we allow her to go on vacation or take some time off for other reasons. She's a very hard worker, so I'm kind of joking. But this is a process that we go through to make sure that the Justice Court, if she can't clear her docket during that time, we have to make sure that there's a judge available.
So how many judges would you appoint?
I think this one, at this point we're appointing one judge to cover a short period of time.
And do you know who it is at this point?
It's in the staff report, and I'm not remembering the name right now.
Okay. Are you going to make me read that? And then it looks like there are going to be some awards given out to some longtime county employees.
Well, not just awards, but just recognition, really. We have three employees retiring that equal almost 95 years of service to Summit County. So Ronnie Sue Wild, Ben Blomquist, and Sally Piercy all have worked for us for a very long time, dedicated service, and the council is very active in wanting to recognize those folks and what they've contributed to Summit County.
Fantastic. Okay. And the purchasing agent, you're picking the new purchasing agent. Is this your job to do that?
Yes, it is. Okay. The purchasing and risk fall under my purview. So we are appointing Clay Coleman as our purchasing agent. We've kind of tossed that around for the past year and a half. As Matt Jensen left the county to go take a city manager job in New York.
And Clay comes from animal control.
He does. And okay. He also has an interesting background. He has worked in banking for quite a long time before that, so familiar with some of the systems that we have in place, or at least the policies that we have in place around purchasing and risk. He's been acting as our risk manager for over a year already. So he has quite a bit of experience with that. He's been taking us through quite a large OSHA, not OSHA, but Utah OSHA inspection that is happening this year. So he just steps into the job with quite a bit of experience already.
Okay. And then it looks like possibly there's a decision that will be made about the Lower Silver Creek Bell Station to the Bittner Road alignment. What does that mean?
Well, the county has desired to have a connection between Bittner Road around the Bittner Ranch building properties as it goes up into Glenwild. to the Silver Creek area for quite a long time. They've been evaluating kind of three alignments. One is rather high and connects the road up to Glenwild farther north and up into Silver Creek, and one's kind of mid between the highway and in that area, and then this frontage road concept that we've been evaluating. The council has had one public meeting about that in the past 2 months. We're following it up, as was promised at that meeting. I don't think there's any real new information, except that we've gone out and done a lot more outreach in relation to that, to provide some more education. And so the council wanted to bring this back and hear it again.
So for people who don't live over there and have to deal with it, right now Promontory has to go out on the highway in order to get to Silver Creek?
Not Promontory, Silver Creek.
So, I'm sorry.
Yes.
Okay,
So Silver Creek, in order, say if you're going to Kimball Junction to shop at Smith's, you have to get on the highway on I-80 in order to access Kimball Junction instead of having a frontage road connection.
And it's just, it kind of comes to a stop at... I mean, there is a frontage road that goes past the fire station.
That's correct.
Yeah, but then it comes to a full
about a quarter mile to a half mile to the east of that.
Okay,
And then goes up into Glenwild.
I mean, wouldn't that be the most cost effective and most sensible?
Well, according to our staff report, the most cost effective is the frontage road connection, but it has some issues with it. Naturally, so the neighborhood that has been built, the Woodside Homes. They run right up against that. The road was certainly planned. There was right-of-way set aside for that by the developer. So that road was planned as that housing development went in. Plus, we have to work out right-of-way terms with the Bittner family at some point if that alignment is picked. So
okay.
There's still things to do after picking an alignment.
Sure. And then finally, there's a briefing on the fair housing law at 6:30, and you're not planning to make any decisions
with this,
but yeah. But what does it mean?
We certainly have affordable housing as one of our strategic initiatives. Plus, we constantly are working on our general plans, and probably will be going through some major general plan updates over the next few years. And re-educating ourselves on fair housing law and federal rules around that is probably a good thing in this, because we have to consider those things as we do our general plans. So we'll pull both planning commissions in as well as our county council to hear a professional from Housing and Urban Development talk us through that issue.
Okay. And that's at 6:30.
That's correct.
Okay. All Wednesday afternoon or Wednesday evening.
At the Richens Building.
Richens. Okay. Thanks so much, Tom, for coming in.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Well, this these next two guests that we have in are Jory McComber, who's the director of the Kimball Arts Center, along with Jocelyn Scudder, community manager. She's going to help Jory talk about this monster drawing event coming up at the Kimball this week. Welcome, both of you. Thanks for coming in.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for having us.
So the Kimball Arts Center and Park City Summit County Arts Council have partnered to host the monster drawing event, which allows spectators, this is a spectator sport, to spy on the creative process, interact with the local artists, and grow their own art collections, which I love the sound of that. So Jory, let's first start off. You're a little bit new to the position as the executive director for Kimball Arts Center.
That's right.
This sounds to me like kind of a unique event, and it sounds like it's a bit of a competitive creativity event, which is funny because we have such a competitive group of people living here, from athletes to performers and all kinds of things. And it just seems only natural that we would add a little competition to our arts and cultural efforts.
Yeah, it's a very exciting, dramatic, active event. We love partnering with the Park City Summit County Arts Council, and we love giving opportunities to local artists to show their work. And it's more about live and drama versus competition. Like, there isn't a winner or a loser, but you get to see the process messy and in action.
Except then, for the one who gets the actual artwork is the winner
true.
Or the loser. Am I right?
Right? That's true.
Sorry to interrupt, but go ahead.
So everyone puts a, if you like the art, you put your name in and then and someone gets drawn from the cards. Yeah, so it's that way.
Okay, so what does it look like? I mean, do you have five artists going at once? What is, tell us about the setup and
sure.
how it looks.
Yes, yeah, so we actually have over 30 artists participating this year, most of them local, some from the Valley and Wasatch County, but mainly from Summit County, which is super exciting. And so it's really to kind of, I don't know if competition is the right word. It's really to level the playing field. So everything that's made throughout the night is $50 flat rate. So you can't, you know, continue to take out your wallet and up the price. And so that's a very different type of auction. Usually it's, you know, the more money you offer, that, you know, the higher the bid. But this kind of levels the playing field. It allows for, you know, collectors, there's an accessibility about it, which is kind of breaking down the barriers of a normal auction. And so throughout the night, groups of artists will draw and make 2D artwork in 50-minute shifts. And so we're going to have probably, on average, it looks like we just did the shifts recently, and there's about 20 artists making at one time. And so people can kind of, you know, stroll through, and it's all 2D art, but every artist is so different. And so they make and complete a piece of art in a 50-minute time period, which you can imagine for an artist could be a little challenging. So it's a fun I don't know, kind of dramatic event for them as well. And it's a little bit of a challenge. And so anything finished within those 50 minutes, so 50, not 15, they're immediately available for purchase for $50 each. And so just like last year's event, the luck of the draw decides the winner of the piece. And so last year it was really fun because, you know, there would be about five people kind of watching this one artist that they loved, and then a volunteer will take, you know, the piece of art, put it on the wall, and they hand out playing cards, and, you know, the highest card takes the piece. So it's a little bit of it's organized chaos, we like to call it.
Yeah.
Very energetic, and it's a really good opportunity for artists to connect with local art enthusiasts, you know, build clients, you know, so we're hoping it kind of has that cyclical effect and benefit to them
so,
as well.
Yeah, so you've got this room, several rooms filled with people. You've got artists working in different stations. Is it the kind of thing where it's like a golf tournament and everyone's whispering?
Oh, man, no
or
way.
Are people
Absolutely
screaming
not.
And cheering and carrying on? And
well,
I mean,
I
what's...
think, maybe a middle
Something
ground.
In between?
I don't know about the screaming and cheering. We're going to have a DJ, generously provided by Skull Candy. DJ Finale will be here. So, you know, there'll be beats playing throughout the night. People are talking. They're, you know, sharing with the artists, too. So it's noisy. I mean, people are talking. It's energetic and live. So, but it's no golf tournament. Okay. Opposite of that.
So, Jory, have you ever seen anything like this? Have you had a chance to participate in anything like this?
So I wasn't at the Monster Drawing last year. I have seen individual artists on the stage do art, performance art like this, but not in a big group and not where then people pick a card and try to win the piece. Mm-hmm. That's all new to me.
Mm-hmm. And how many people can you accommodate? What's the,
well,
is there some,
you know,
fixed number?
We had about 300 people come through last year, which is great. We're projecting about the same as, you know, it's going to be at the Kimball Art Center. We're so appreciative for the partnership and hosting the event there. And so I think even the room capacity is around 300. So tickets are available. And we do encourage to buy in advance so that you can secure your spot. And tickets can be available, you know, at either KimballArtCenter.org or PCSCArts.org.
Okay.
It's $20 in advance, $25 at the door.
Okay. And let's talk about the details, the date, time, that kind of thing.
Sure.
So it's this Thursday, May 31st. It starts at 6 and ends at 9.
9:30. Well, that's where it goes a little late. So yeah. 6 to 9:30, I think, is our projected time.
So can you kind of arrive at 8 and be a
Definitely.
Participating?
You'll come right in the middle of a shift, so you might not be able to just have as much time with the artist. But if you come at 8, you can probably participate and bid on the last two rounds. So there's three rounds throughout the night. So it is kind of, you know, a progression, and people can come and go. We also have a ton of food sponsors. We're really thankful for Twisted Fern, Dontier Taste, Cafe Trio, River Horse, and Boneyard. So,
Ooh,
yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. So
for $20.
Yeah.
Hmm. $20 in advance. Okay, so and the artists who are participating, you said most are local. You also threw in there most are 2D performance. So
well, they have
so
to
no
be 2D.
Yeah, it's so no speed welding or any of that stuff.
No, that would be really challenging.
That would be interesting.
Like, yeah. Maybe for another event down the road. Yeah, so everything is 2D. So painting, collage, drawing, and then however else, you know, there's a lot of different variations that we run into. But essentially we want to... you know, easy to take away too. So everything is put into nice little art sleeves at the end. So that's why there's that 2D,
Okay. And it's, and the $50 that people spend on updating their new art collection, that goes to what organization? Is it a...
So it covers the cost of the event, and then it helps support the Kimball Arts Center and education programs in the Summit County Arts Council and their work.
Okay. And anything else going on, Jory, this summer with
Yeah, lots
Kimball?
Going on. On June 8th, we have an opening for our exhibit that goes along with Latino Arts Festival. If you could try my Spanish, Historia de Ayer y Hoy, Stories of Yesterday and Today.
Okay.
And that'll be June 8th, and it'll run for about a month. And there's some great, that features nine artists, Latino artists, from the state of Utah. It's a great show.
Mm-hmm. And, of course, the Arts Festival coming up
in August, and we have summer camp starting on June 11th.
All right.
Yeah.
Okay. Summer's here. Thank you so much for coming in, Jocelyn and Jory. Our next guest coming in this morning is Shelley Gilwald, and she is representing, of course, we all know this, the Park City Soccer Club. It looks like she's kind of racing her way in here. I'm going to put you live. Welcome, Shelley. Thank you for coming by.
Good morning, Carolyn.
And it looks like we've got a new coaching director.
We do. Eli Ulvey has relocated to Park City for the purpose of becoming the director of coaching for the Park City Soccer Club. He has moved down here from Alaska. Actually, this past year, our board did a national search. We had over 150 applicants and settled on Eli.
150 applicants for coaching director.
And Eli rose to the top with his focus on players and player development. We were really interested in what he would bring to the table, and so he's here.
Okay, and he's ready to go.
He is.
He's here for tryouts, which we're not calling tryouts anymore.
Player placement.
Okay.
Yes.
What does that mean, player placement?
You know, it's essentially, that's an Eli question. However, you know, most of the players have been involved in our system, and it's instead of a one-time kind of performance thing, It's an opportunity for us to work with the players and get them, placed with the right teams at their right competitive level.
Okay. Welcome, Eli Ulvey. We have just arriving in studio. Thank you for coming by, Eli.
Absolutely. Thanks for having us.
Yeah. So talk to us a little bit. We're discussing why we're not calling it tryouts anymore. It's called player placement. What does all of that mean for the player?
Yeah, we're very committed to keeping as many kids involved in the program as possible and giving kids opportunities to develop and play a game they very much enjoy.
So that means that no child will not be on a team, basically? Or
that's the goal, whether that happens or not. We'll see. It's all dependent on player numbers and who turns up.
Okay. And then technical, it said in some of this news release that you were looking for someone who had some technical expertise. What does that mean exactly?
As far as from my standpoint or from Shelley's standpoint?
Well, from ours in hiring you, but I think what you bring to the table in terms of technical development of our players.
Yeah, I think it's a very broad term. If you talk to any soccer coach and you talk about technique, you're talking about a player's individual ability to manipulate the ball in a variety of ways. But technically, overall, as an umbrella statement, we're just talking about being able to develop players in a multitude of ways. Develop players technically, tactically, they understand the game, they're cognition, as well as some of the other aspects that a lot of clubs don't typically focus on. You know, we talk about it as a whole player development component where we're looking at players' capabilities to get good sleep, understand nutrition and how that affects their capability to play and develop as an athlete and just what it means to be an athlete.
Okay. How many kids are we talking about in the Park City Soccer Club now?
Including our foundation program, which are the littlest kids, we have over 525 kids.
Okay. Boys, girls.
Boys and girls, and ages 5 through 18.
5 through 18. Okay. And Eli, you're going to be director over all those teams. Basically, those coaches will report to you and get guidance and direction from you.
Absolutely. And some of the things we're working on right now are long-term player development or athlete development program and planning so that when families come into the organization at 5 years old, they could actually see a player pathway all the way until that player graduates out of the program at 18. They understand the programming. There's continuity between each program. And our coaches are going to be very knowledgeable about what they're doing at what ages for the players and understanding the philosophy and methodology in what we do at each step of the way.
Okay, and we had player placements last week for the smallest kids, is that right?
That's right. And okay. For this afternoon, we start with players from birth year 2005 up to 2001, and then later in the week we have 2006, 2007, 2008.
So I'm trying to sort of visualize with like 5 and 6 year olds, there's not really placement. I mean,
And that's actually our foundation program, and those kids are involved in a skill development program 1 or 2 days a week.
So
and
they didn't do tryouts?
No.
Okay. It starts a little bit later in the age range. So what is it? I mean, we have a lot of kids who could not afford to play club soccer here in Park City.
That's right, Carolyn. And one of the things I think I'm most proud of is the fact that the Park City Soccer Club awards over $50,000 in scholarships. They're need-based scholarships. They're not performance-based scholarships. And we're fortunate to be able to do that based on the success of our tournament, the Extreme Cup, that's held each summer.
Okay, and how does that reach out happen? I mean, there are people who probably are too proud to say, I would love my child to do this, but I can't afford it.
You know, it's a confidential process, and they work directly with me. And I hear from families. They know. The forms are available on the website, so people can download those and learn a little bit more about the process before calling me. It's also a tiered system. Some families just need a little bit of help. And the other thing that we do is we can extend the payments over 10 months. And for a lot of families, that makes a difference, that they don't have to pay all at once.
Okay, different options for financial situations. And then what do you expect from players and families for those who want to join?
We're looking at just commitment, giving the program an opportunity to really serve the families when they come in. We've put in a lot of time and effort into being very thoughtful and deliberate about how we lay out our program and the offerings that we give. And we just want to make sure that when families come in, they understand we're committed to them, and we hope they can stay committed to us for the year and let us do our job and help their kids along the process. And along the way, I think that these families will realize the benefits. It's not just about developing players in a soccer sense, but also we're there to really help young people develop as young people and as positive, productive members of society.
Okay, great. And just finally, Shelley, what about the tournament? What's happening?
Well, the tournament is July 26th through 28th. Again, we will be at 13 venues on 43 fields in Park City, Oakley, and Heber. Registration is open right now. And so we are just in the midst of gearing up for that. Certainly there are a lot of volunteer opportunities. And, you know, Carolyn, one of the neat things that we do, not only does the Extreme Cup allow the Park City Soccer Club to give out scholarships, we work with other youth-based programs in the community. The tournament is too big for just the membership of our club. And with that, we involve, whether it's band or tennis or lacrosse program, we give those organizations an opportunity for those kids to work, volunteer at the tournament, and we pay a $10 an hour fee back to their programs. We don't pay the kids to work, but it's an opportunity for those other youth-based organizations to fundraise off the Extreme Cup as well.
Okay. Well, we're going to have to leave it there. Thank you so much for coming
Thanks,
in, Shelley Gilwald and Eli Ulvey from the Park City Soccer Club.